Okay, so our agenda for today and tomorrow, and this week in general. So first of all, just a little bit of somewhat housekeeping related, I guess. So today is still Adar, so it's still appropriate a little bit, or even more than a little bit, to still have some sense of Adar. That the idea of Mishenichnas Adar Ma'abrim B'Simcha doesn't end with Purim. Even though the Gemara says in Tainus that Kishem Shemematen B'Simcha Ba'av Kein Marbim B'Simcha Ba'adar, it's not really parallel, because in Av it really is the lead up to Tisha B'Av and then it's done. Then we have two Ba'av, everything's happy, everything's different. On Adar, we don't have such a din. In Adar, it's not just the lead up to Purim, but even after Purim, there is still a din of Simcha. I noticed that there seems to be different opinions as to why that is. Rashi and Tainus seems to suggest that Purim and Pesach merge to create one season. Mishnechmas Adar Marav Mesimcha, because it's days of Nisim, of plural miracles, Purim v'Pesach. So now we have a Chi of Riboy Simcha that continues because of Pesach. While others don't necessarily blame it on Pesach, but others understand that the Pasuk says, Achodesh, this month was Nefach into Simcha, this month was all transformed into Simcha, so it's not a din that stops on the one day in which it's focused. But there is a Chi of Simcha throughout all of Adar. So in that sense, maybe it's a little bit appropriate to share something Purim-related that happens to tie into the sugya we were talking about last week. So I thought maybe I would quickly share it with you and you could tell me what you think. So Gil Simchi sent me on Purim, right after Purim, something under the title of Purim Torah. It was written by Rabbi Yossi Sirot, and it is about the halachas of superheroes. You've read this? Okay, so there was one paragraph that was relevant to what we did last week, so I just wanted to share that paragraph with you and ask what you think about it, the halacha, if it should ever come up. The question in the section is devoted to Hilchos Shabbos. The question is there a problem with super speed? So if a person runs... So that's, he doesn't talk about it, that's why I wanted to also raise. So he says as follows, because it was particularly in terms of the sugya we spoke about just immediately before Purim. So it says, the Mishnah in Shabbos 22:6 says that on Shabbos, lo mis'amlin. And Rashi says, mis'amlin means to exert pressure when massaging. Mishnah Brura explains that exerting pressure is an uvda dechal, a weekday activity and therefore forbidden. Thus, according to Rashi, there's no isser, apparently no specific isser, to exercise on Shabbos. The Rambam 21:28, however, explains mis'amlin to mean exertion, and says that one may not rub one's body in such a way that it will cause one to sweat. Likewise, one may not walk in order to sweat, because sweating is a refuah, which is problematic on Shabbos. Right? It's problematic, apparently, to acknowledge the machlokas about whether it's a full-blown isser or not. The Shulchan Aruch brings both Rashi and the Rambam as halacha. Thus, la halacha, it's usher to cause oneself to sweat when it's done as a refuah. According to many opinions, maintaining health is also a form of refuah, and we saw on Sunday that that's a somewhat, or Monday we saw that as somewhat questionable, depending on how you interpret the Magen Avraham and the like. The Mishnah Brura says that calisthenics are usur on Shabbos, and the explanation he offers is because it causes body heat and hence sweating occurs. It would seem that if one wishes to relieve a slightly stiff neck and gently massages one's neck, or if one wishes to loosen one's arm and legs by shaking them up and doing very simple basic exercise in mutter, such motions do not produce sweat and one has no intention to sweat. The answer to this question would thus depend on the level of exercise and sweat that super speed produces. For a superhero can run super fast without breaking a sweat, such as Flash, who would be mutter on Shabbos. On the other hand, it requires exertion. He's doing it for exercise to maintain his super fitness, it would be usser. Of course, it goes without saying that the super speed must be done to save a life, and Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos. So I just thought that was an interesting ha'ara to make in light of what we spoke about last week. I don't know if you necessarily would apply it the same way. As we saw, the question of if it's done purely for maintaining health is a little bit of a shiloh. That was the whole vitamins question that we saw. It also brings up a question that the issue seems to be that if one is doing something unusual, so then it becomes more of a prohibition in terms of refuah. That the refuah specifically, as we discussed, maybe is specifically a hard exercise, or a hard massage rather than a soft massage, an intense running. So it would seem to be somewhat relative. So if your normal pace is super speed, and Taki, don't break a sweat, which is the point he was raising, so then maybe it's not so clear what category that should be in, or should that be called any kind of a refuah, or any called of an exercise. So then the issue, he doesn't discuss the issue that Jonathan raised. So what about Psia Gasa? This would seem to be presumably anyone's definition of Psia Gasa, except that presumably it's also somewhat relative to what you normally do. So maybe such a person would just have to lower his super speed. But the difference between Psia Gasa and Refuah, as we saw also, is that Psia Gasa is mutter for Dvar Mitzvah, which we saw that Refuah doesn't automatically become mutter, let's say, for Onik Shabbos, but Psia Gasa does become mutter for Dvar Mitzvah. So that's a lower standard. So while he says here that if it's Pikuach Nefesh, then it'll be, everything will be mutter, yes. But what if it's not Pikuach Nefesh? So hopefully everything such an individual does is for some type of Hatzalah, some type of Dvar Mitzvah. So then the standard would be lower for Psia Gasa than Refuah. So if the only issue is Psia Gasa, even if we consider that to be a Psia Gasa, probably would be mutter anyway. We'd be able to use super speed to get to Shir, to get to Shul. That would presumably be mutter. So these are some of the issues that could come up. You know, I'm not going to put anybody on the spot asking if anybody has such a secret identity, but these are issues that potentially could be relevant. Okay, so that's in terms of... Yes, sir?
Psia Gasa didn't run here, or is it just in taking big steps?
So it seems like it's in the correlation between the two, that generally if you take larger steps, you move more quickly. So I always assume that the Gemara uses the expression as a way of saying that it's you're moving faster. I asked Rabbi Willig once if skipping steps on a staircase is considered to be Psia Gasa, where again, you're getting to you're not actually moving faster, but you're getting to your end point more quickly. So maybe that's actually the nafkamina of what you're asking, that if you're taking larger steps, you're not exerting yourself more as much as you are moving more quickly. But this desire to move more quickly seems to be a chol-related event. So maybe the step-skipping question is related to what you're asking. Is, you know, a din in the speed exertion or a din in the steps? Seems like the Gemara uses that phrase as a way of saying that that's a desire to move fast is inappropriate for Shabbos.
What did Rabbi Willig say?
He said it would seem like it should be a problem. When I asked him, it was in Marsha Kolo, and the steps go up to the base measure. He says, but here you're using these steps, presumably it's the Dvar Mitzvah, so it won't come up. But often a lot of the places we go on Shabbos, hopefully, are some Dvar Mitzvah oriented, but theoretically maybe it would be considered double steps. Okay, so now in terms of Meraki, I just want to say a word about our agenda for this week. So we wanted to take notice a little bit in an attempt for greater synergy, and why not, of the fact this week is Parshas Vayakel, which of course is very relevant to all of Shabbos, but it's a good time to ponder the meaning of Melachas Machsheves, which we never gave direct focus to. So right after we finish Meraki, by tomorrow sometime, we'd like to look a little bit at the concept of Melachas Machsheves for a day or two, which will help us appreciate the Parsha a little bit more, as well as it being, as we know, a central defining principle in all of Hilchos Shabbos, so it's certainly worth attention from that angle. But even before we get to Melachas Machsheves, so it's very relevant just to understanding this Melacha. This Melacha is also very relevant to Parshas Vayakel. So this whole week we can be considered learning Parsha, getting an early start on the Parsha, because specifically the Melacha of Merakid, as we alluded to a little bit last week, so much of what's relevant about Merakid, much of what's interesting about Merakid, has to do with the concept of Chiluk Melachos, which is likely derived from this week's parsha, Elo Sevaru Eish B'chol Mosh V'Seichem B'Yom HaShabbos, the fact that Havara is singled out as a Malacha, so we know that that's both Parsha Synergy and Yivamis Unity. This is Gemara, the first parak of Yivamis, as well as elsewhere, that Havara is identified as a Malacha, while the other Malachas are not singled out in the Torah, and says the Gemara, and according to one opinion, Havara L'chalik Yotzis, Havara is singled out in order to teach us the principle of Chiluk Malachas, that Malachas are distinct from each other. And when we talked about that a little bit earlier in the year, so we saw that there is at least one relevance of this, the fact that a person can be Chayiv multiple Kurbanos for Chil Shabbos if he does different malachos. We don't consider that to be repeated iterations of the same Isser. We consider them to be different Isurim, so to speak, at least for the purposes of the Karban. It's as if these Isurim were listed separately in the Torah, even though they're not. So it's as if there was a pasuk that says don't write, a pasuk that says don't bake, a pasuk that says don't plant, etc., etc. At least for the purposes of Karbanos. We also saw that some Rishonim explained that maybe that's also why, I mean, some Achronim explained the view of some of the Rishonim, the issue we touched upon a little bit last week and talked about earlier in the year at more length, the question of whether Hasra requires that you identify the Av. The view of some of the Rishonim, Rashi in some places, that when you give Hasra, you have to identify the Av that's being violated. So Tosfos and others disagreed and said, why should it be different than any other Isser in the Torah? Every other Isser in the Torah, at most, you have to identify the Isser. You don't have to get into more specific detail. Somebody's eating basu b'chalav. You want to give him hasra from Malkus, so it's enough to say he's over basu b'chalav. You don't have to say you're over on a cheeseburger from Wendy's on a Tuesday. You don't have to go into every specific detail. There's no reason to add more details than the Torah assigns to the Isser itself. So why should the Malachos be any different? If the Torah only tells us, don't be Mechal Shabbos, why in the world should there be a need to say to somebody, oh, you're violating Kosev, you're violating Borer? Should be enough to say that you're violating Shabbos. According to Rambam, you don't even have to say that much. You don't even have to name the Isser at all. But if you have to name the Isser, it should be enough to name what the Torah calls it. There's no need to go into more detail. So some explain that this is also an extension of the concept of chiluk malachos, that once the Torah in this week's parsha tells us that the malachos have distinct identities, so we treat it for all intents and purposes as if the Torah spelled out each malacha by itself, as if there were 39 psukim in the Torah identifying each malacha on its own, and therefore having ramifications for hasra purposes as well, according to those rishonim. So all of these issues that come out of this pasuk of Lo Sevaru Eish B'chol Mosh Vaseichem and what does Chiluk Malachos mean, these are really all of the issues that the Malacha of Merakeid is about. Right? All of Merakeid is about what distinguishes it from Borer for the purposes of existing in the first place, possibly for purposes of Echi of Chattis. Where is there Echi of Chattis distinct from Merakeid in Borer? What happens in terms of the halachas of Hasra? That's the topic of the sugya and Kuflamed Ches that we left off on. And to what extent and for what purposes are two otherwise very similar malachos distinct from each other and impacting on each other's definitions? So that's really the heart of this whole sugya. This whole sugya of Merakeid is really all about that, about what does chiluk malachos mean vis-a-vis Borer and Merakeid. And to that extent, so it's very much a Parshas Vayakel topic. It's very much a Lo Sevaru Eish topic. So whether we're talking about Merakeid, or whether we're talking about Melachas Machsheves, or the rest of the Parsha on Thursday, essentially Vayakel is going to dominate our discussions this week, all of the items on our agenda. So these are the issues which, as we've said, are very much relevant to just understanding what Merakeid is about. So when we left off on Tuesday, I guess it was, we had a major machlokus Rishonim how to interpret the Gemara on Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. And the Gemara had a machlokus between Rabba and Rav Zeira. I think Donnie pointed out that's also a Purim connection, their famous involvement there as well. So the machlokus was, if we assume that there's an Isser of Meshamer, which was a machlokus in the Mishnah, and seems to be that the halacha is that there is such an Isser for a person to pour wine through this strainer. So the question is, so what is the Isser? So it's a machlokus in the Gemara. What exactly are you going to give Hasra for? Misham Mai Masrinim Bey, the middle of Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Rabba Amar Misham Borer, Rabbi Zeira Amar Misham Merakeid. And then the very challenging lines explaining the reasoning. Amarabba Kavasi Didi Mistavra, my opinion makes more sense. Madarka Shabara, no tell Ochel Meniach Apsoles. Afachanami, no tell us Ochel Meniach Apsoles. And we discussed, it's a difficult line because When we were learning Borer, we assumed the opposite, right? That Borer is Davka Aser with Psolos mitoch Ochel, and Ochel mitoch Psolos is a heter, rather than the definition of Borer. So that's a difficult line. One way to understand it is we mentioned the Tosfos. Right? Tosfos is so far the only real derech we've seen to understand it. That Tosfos here refers to his comments on Ayin Dalid, that this is referring specifically to a situation where it's Psolos Meruba La'ochel. So basically what it means is that the derech of Borer in the Aser sense is to take the smaller thing from the bigger thing. And that's essentially how we'd have to read this Gemara. The Ma Darko Shal Borer, to take the bigger thing from the smaller thing. And Rav Zeira says, Mishum Merakeid, so his opinion, he says, also, Kavas Hedidim Mestavra, Ma Darko Shal Merakeid, Psolos Milamala, V'Ochel Milamata, Af Hachanami, Psolos Milamala, V'Ochel Milamata. So when it comes to Merakeid, so the garbage is on top, and the good stuff comes out in the bottom. So hachanami, so that's also what's going on here. So the sediment stays on top, and the food goes to the bottom. So that should also link it to Merakeid specifically. Jonathan.
Considering we said that we don't pass in like the Tosfos Ayin Dalid, is that a problem for us? We say that we just don't pass in like a halacha, but we can still use it to be actually a good one.
Yes, that's a good question in general. So why we don't pass in like that? So first of all, it's not so clear that the svar is rejected. Right? We don't paskin like it by itself, you know, meaning that there are rishonim who say that we should, when we have the other two factors in place, we have no kli and la'alter, that will allow even psolos mitoch ochel. So well, we don't paskin like that, but it could be for any combination of reasons. Doesn't mean we necessarily reject Tosfos's main thrust. So the Svara of Tosfos, you know, we don't necessarily accept it as a heter by itself, but Svara's Tosfos, the Svara may still be true, and therefore no reason to not have it as an explanation for this Gemara. We did also mention another way to understand it, that maybe this is called Derech Breira, and the reason Ochel Mitoch Psolos is Mutter when it's with a Kli, and when it's not with a Kli, and when it's the altar, is not because of any lack of Derech Breira, but because of Derech Achila specifically, which we saw when we talked about Borer, where two different approaches how to understand what is the reason for the Heter in that way, so that's another possible approach here. But in any event, in terms of this machlokas, Rabban Rav Zeira, so we started to say last week that there's a very major machlokas in terms of what is their debate about. And so according to Rashi, Rabba is a pluralist. Rabba does not disagree with Rav Zeira. He acknowledges that Merakeid is an option also. He says that he thinks Borer is the right term to use, but if you use Merakeid, it's also acceptable. And Rav Zeira is the one who's more narrow-minded, so to speak. He only allows Merakeid, he doesn't allow Borer. And that's a view that a few other Rishonim have. Ramban probably says like that as well. That's Rashi's view. Tosfos is radically different. And Tosfos and a few other Rishonim side with Tosfos. Tosfos is on Tosfos we saw already. Tosfos and Ayin Gimel Midbei is the one that talks about this question we just mentioned about Hasra B'Shem Ha'av. So Tosfos there makes the point that you have to give Hasra, but not necessarily B'Shem Ha'av. Says those Rishonim who say it has to be B'Shem Ha'av, he doesn't think they're correct. He says the basis for those Rishonim is because the Gemara asks all over the place, including on Kuf Lamed Ches, what malacha is the hasra here? What hasra do you use for this malacha? So it sounds like you have to use an av, because that's why the Gemara asks the question. So Tosfos says, no, I don't think that. If you say Mechal Shabbos, that's fine. It's just maybe you want to help the guy out. Maybe you want to give him a little more detail. He should understand what he's doing wrong. So you choose to use the av. If you're going to choose to use the av, you better get it right. Because if you use the wrong av, so then that's going to be, it's going to have the appearance that you're making fun of him. And I've cited a number of times already Jonathan's question, which I liked very much. The question was asked last semester. We mentioned it last week. That it's a little hard to believe that the person you're addressing is such a lamdin. And you're saying that it's one thing if we want to make up an example. So we could say if a person is writing something on Shabbos and you say to him, oh, you're violating the malacha of cooking. So then he'll think you're joking. He's writing a recipe book, and you say, oh, you're violating cooking by writing a recipe book, he'll think you're joking around. But that's because you picked an example with two malachas that are so obviously unrelated. But an example like Borer or Merakeh, the Gemara tells us that they're linked so closely we could barely have justification to separate them. So, okay, Lamaisa, they're two separate malachas, but they're so linked. What kind of a lamdan are we dealing with that he's going to think you're making fun of him just because you said Borer instead of Merakeh? So that itself was one question. But we see now Jonathan's question is even strengthened when we look at the difference between Rashi and Tosfos. Because Rashi, at least according to Rabbah, says it could be either Borer or Merakeh. But Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that Rabbah and Rav Zeira completely argue on each other, and therefore Rabbah holds it's got to be specifically Borer, and Rav Zeira holds it's got to be specifically Merakeh, and never the twain shall meet. Each one argues on the other, and you can't use the other one. So clearly this is, Tosfos has a very specific idea of what's going on here, and has really narrowed down the playing field to a tremendous degree, and therefore to say that if you happen to take one side or the other of the Machlokas Rabbah and Rav Zeira, right, so apparently if Rabbah were to give Rav Zeira Hasra here for this Maisa, and Rav Zeira were to give Rabbah Hasra, so each one would think the other one is mocking them, even though they're coming from a strong basis, it's a little bit hard to understand how that's the case. That's Tosfos's view. Tosfos, within the same Tosfos, this view of Tosfos, that it's such a specific machlokas, makes their own shita a little bit harder to believe. Their own shita, that we don't really care that you use the av, just make sure not to use the wrong one, because it'll look like you're mocking somebody. It's easier to believe we have such specificity if you really need hasra v'shem av. Otherwise, it's hard to believe that's going to be the case. Okay, so that's essentially the story so far. Everybody so far so good? Everybody on the same page? Okay, so there are a lot of other Rishonim who get involved in this debate, and this debate is a point of entry to a number of other things. One of them is Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel is particularly difficult because Rabbeinu Chananel seems to contradict his own Shita. Unless you could be miyashiv him. Because Rabbeinu Chananel sides with Tosfos over here. Rabbeinu Chananel's view is that Rabbah and Rav Zeira are completely at odds. And you have to give, if you give Hasra, according to Rabbah, if you give Hasra because of Merakeh, it's no good. So that's a little bit difficult, because how does Rabbeinu Chananel understand the difference between Borer and Merakeh? We talked about this a little bit last week. What's the difference, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, between Borer and Merakeh? Kli, right? Someone said over there, Kli. So that's the whole issue, basically. So Merakeh, if you're using a Kli, Kate, that's the answer, Kate's a Merakeh. So why, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, does Rabbah reject that? If that's really the definition of Merakeh, so maybe you could understand Reb Zeira's view. That Mishamer has to be Merakeh. Because there's a Kli involved. But why does Rabbah, maybe Rabbah says it could be called Borer also. But why does he throw out Merakeh? Why would Rabbah, according to Rabbeinu Chananel Shikaso, why would Rabbah say that it can't also be Merakeh? So that's a difficulty we'll have to see if we can address. So a lot of the Rishonim have difficult positions in terms of interpreting this. That's one issue we have to try to figure out. Another point, so the Ran quotes the Ra'a. What does the Ra'a say? Who does the Ra'a side with? Well, the Ra'a really is against Rashi. Because the Ra'a thinks that he doesn't see Rashi's need to say what he's saying. That's what the Ra'a expresses. And the Ra'a says, what's the difference between Borer and Merakeh? That Merakeh is specifically only relevant to Yavesh. Has to be something that is dry. So, therefore, if that's the case, maybe that is Rabbah's opinion, that since we're dealing here with wine, which is wet, so then maybe it shouldn't be called Merakeh. So what's the basis of that? Why would you say that's true? Right? If, let's say, you want to follow the Ra'a's Shita, that if that merakeid is specifically dry material. Why should that be true? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Well, you saw this raya we had on the Maamar Kamos last week. It's quoted in the Shita Laharan. So, but he doesn't explain why. But why should it be specifically? There's a difference between something that's, is it arbitrary? Is it go back to the Mishkan and that's what they were using? They were using flour, which happens to be dry. So it could be that there's a substantive difference. Rav Nosson Gishtadner talks about this in his Sefer Tal Nosson on Shabbos. He says that maybe the issue is that, is there a physical difference? Think about it for a second. If you pour liquid through a strainer and you put flour through a sieve or whatever you want to call the utensil, is there any difference in the process? Jonathan?
So with the liquid, always the liquid's going to go to the bottom of the, well, assuming you'd want the liquid itself to be on top. But with the solid, it might not be the case.
Right, so that's an important point, the point you're making about which is psalas and which is ocho. But there's something else that he's focusing on, because you could theoretically flip those around on that side also. So let's assume that we're talking about wine on the one hand, the liquid, and the solid, let's say the ochel is smaller, objectively smaller. So still, is there a difference in the process? So one difference is that when you're dealing with wine, it basically happens automatically. Now you just pour it through and it goes. But when you're dealing with, let's say, flour, so there's something you have to do. And that's really what the word merakeid is talking about. Right? You have to shuffle it around. And we got into last week a little bit trying to define the word merakeid. We talked about sifting, and we asked for, see if we get more specific definition of what sifting is. So perhaps sifting has, by its very nature, some level of human involvement in the process. That you're using a kli, but the kli is there as part of your physical sifting, as opposed to, let's say, the wine straining situation where the nature of liquid is going to fall right through. You don't have to do anything in order to make the liquid go through. It's going to go through automatically. So maybe that gives us an actual physical difference between the two processes, and therefore the definition of merakeid maybe means using your hand to take a kli and shuffle it around. And maybe that's a key difference where, therefore, Rabbah's opinion is going to be there's no merakeid here at all with the wine situation because you don't have to use your hand to shuffle things around at all. Gil, you wanted to comment on that?
I have two comments. Is this saying, this is explaining the Gedra when it's talking about the difference between wine and flour for the Av, or is it saying that wine would be potter maybe?
Well, so the question is, he's trying to figure out what the chiyuv is of Meshamer. Yeah, well, so Meshamer seems to be a tolda, right? The question, that seems to be the case, right? The question is, which av does it go with? So the Ra'ah's opinion is that it doesn't go with Borer, or let's say maybe it doesn't go with Merakeid, let's say according to Rabbah, because Merakeid is Biyavish. And so what Gishtadner is explaining is what's significant about Yavish is that Yavish means you're going to physically do something. Well, if it's wet, you don't have to do anything. If it's liquid, you don't have to do anything. And therefore, that's not going to enter into Merakeid. So Rabbah's opinion that it's Davka Borer against Rashi, right, that it's Davka Borer, not Borer or Merakeid, but Davka Borer is because Merakeid requires you to hold something. It requires you to shift something around, and that's not what's going on here.
Could that be an extension of Rabbeinu Chanal, that's like within what the
clean means, that it's a clean that you have to move. So you're saying that if Rabbeinu Hananel believes that, you're saying that's why Rabbeinu Hananel would say, against Rashi, say that it's not, that Merakeid is not included, because even though, yeah, see, that could be an answer for Rabbeinu Hananel, presumably, yeah. That maybe even though Rabbeinu Hananel defines Merakeid as kli, so still you don't have to say that any time there's a kli, it's Merakeid, because maybe it's a certain kind of kli usage. That's, yeah, that could theoretically be an answer for Rabbeinu Hananel. Okay, so this, as he also points out, the Tal Nosson, that this relates to something we mentioned, we talked about Borer, the view of the Maharitz Sahalon. Anyone remember that? He was talking about, if do Chazar soon also, by the way, that's also going to be on our agenda. Again, the nature of Shabbos is always a constant Chazar, because every Malacha draws upon the previous Malachas, but we have to do formal Chazar sometime soon also. But the view of the Maharitz Salon, if any of you remember, has to do with the fly in the drink. And so the question is there a problem with taking a fly out of the drink? Right, so the view of the Ma'arid Sahalon was that this was okay. Why? Because it's not borer. Because it's not borer because it's biyad, and it's not mishamer because it is belach. Right, since you're dealing with wine, which is liquid, so it's not going to be mishamer, and since you're using your hand, so therefore it's not going to be borer either, which you could say, following Rabbi Nachmanan, it's not Meraki because of the hand, but this is focusing on a different element, that because of the liquid nature, so it's neither borer nor mishamer. So the question is, does the Ra'ah sounds like that a lot, right? The focusing on liquids versus solids, it's definitely evocative of the Ra'ah. But the question is, does the Ra'ah really agree? Because you could say the Ra'ah is telling you that Merakid has to be Yavish. But does that mean that Borer can't include Merakid? Or that Borer can't apply here to Lach? So not necessarily. So that's a little bit of a question whether or not they really are going to correlate. But there definitely is some echo of the Ra'ah in this view of the Maharit Salon. So those are some of the views who disagree on Rashi, Ben Hananel and the Ra'ah and Tosus. So B'Kiva Eger and the Egle Tal and a few others, so they find Tosus' view a little bit hard. And they say, similarly to what we said a few minutes ago, that it's hard to see why Rabbah shouldn't also allow Meraki. So we mentioned a few minutes ago that for Rabbeinu Chananel it's difficult because of his own sheet about the definition. But even leaving Rabbeinu Chananel out of it, so what about the Gemara? Right, so according to the Gemara, so Rabbah says, I think I'm right because of Borer being Ochel Mitoch Psolas. So, fine, but does Merakid not have that also? Is he necessarily, Rabbah's going to say, I'm interested in Merakid specifically because of the upside-down nature of the Benahafochu of things, right, that things go down. But according to Rabbah, that the defining factor of Borer is that it's Ochel Mitoch Psoles, so therefore this Meshamer is Ochel Mitoch Psoles. But Merakid is not that. Right? Is Merakid specifically not Ochel Mitoch Psoles? How are we deciding that Merakid is by definition not Ochel Mitoch Psoles? Yes, sir?
Maybe it's not that you're taking one away from the other, that it's really both of them, but it's sort of the Zomer Bizarre Leitzim type thing, that only one of them can work at once?
So the problem is, so you're saying that's really where Tosus comes from, that really, it could be that it's both, right? Is that the thing? That point's going to come up again, but you're applying it in an interesting way. You're saying that Tosus really reads Rabbah saying that you're right, I agree that it's Merakid, but you can only have one winner, so therefore it's going to be Borer. That's interesting. It's a little hard to say, but we'll see the nature of how they exclude each other, overlap with each other, is an interesting question. But that's an interesting view. The Egle Tal, when he addresses this question, the Egle Tal makes an interesting point. He quotes from the Balatanya, whose expertise in Borer was so established that he was known as the Alter Rebbe. So relevant to what you were doing just now. So the Alter Rebbe has a comment in his Sidur Shel Shabbos, which, as others point out, may be contradicted by something he wrote elsewhere. But he says the following thing. Let's say you have a drink, and you have some psolas falls into the drink. So you tilt the drink to pour out the psolas. Is that psolas mitoch ochel or ochel mitoch psolas? What do you think?
Well,
Sorry?
What was the case?
The case is you have a drink, and some psolas fell into the drink. So you're going to pour out the psolas. Right? Now you have my drink, pour out the psolas, now I go back to my drink. Is that psolas mitoch ochel or ochel mitoch psolas? So,
I would say, because you're holding on to the ochel.
Ah, what you, who said over here psolas mitoch ochel? Yeah, how do you want to explain it?
Because yes, you're keeping the ochel, but you're getting rid of the psolas.
Okay, so you both have valid initial approaches. So Ephraim's point that you're pouring out psola sounds like it's psolos mitoch ochel. But in terms of what the Eglei Tal quotes here, so Gil is correct, that's called ochel mitoch psolas. Because even though your gesture is to send away the psolas, but what are you holding on to? You're holding on to the ochel in the cup, so therefore that becomes the standard. The fact that you're holding on to the ochel, that makes it ochel mitoch psolas. And if you would throw away the ochel and hold on to the psolas, it would be psolas mitoch ochel. So then the question becomes, if that's really the definition here, then in the case of borer, the ochel stays with you, and in the case of merakeid, maybe it's the opposite. So how do you view the situation here on Kuf Lamed Ches, about the wine strainer? What's unique about that situation? What's in your hand in that case? Okay, wine's one possibility. What's another possibility?
Strainer.
What's another possibility? Sorry? The sediment, maybe. Or a fourth possibility is nothing. Right? Because the context here is that it's suspended. So since it's suspended, that's a trick question, but since it's suspended, right, so maybe there's nothing left beyond. So if the way this happens is that it's poured out that way, so maybe this definition of ochel mitoch psolas, which is a necessary element of borer, maybe that's not here. Even according to, according to Reb Zeira, and psolas mitoch ochel being a necessary definition of merakeid, maybe that's not here according to Rabba. Maybe the two opinions are mutually exclusive, because maybe we don't have a definition of which one it is because of the straining situation. Now, the view the Eglei Tal prefers, there are those who argue the way I just said it, that really we have no reason to prefer one or the other then. If this item is suspended in air and nothing is left physically in your hand, so then maybe we shouldn't prefer either one. We shouldn't say either model is necessarily dominant. But the view that the Eglei Tal prefers, which as later Sfarim point out, seems to be also supported by Ramban on Ayin Dalet, is that this is called Ochel Mitoch Psolas. That even though you're not holding anything, but we're not going to call that Psolas Mitoch Ochel, we'll call that Ochel Mitoch Psolas. But that maybe that's the key issue here, the fact that we can define everything based on what you're holding in your hand, and here you're not holding anything in your hand, so therefore it kind of throws everything up for grabs, or up for redefinition. What does the Rambam hold about all this? And so where does the Rambam fit into this whole story?
It says a tolda.
It says a tolda, right? That's probably agreed upon by everyone. But a tolda of what?
It says one or the other.
Ah, so one or the other. So what does that mean, halacha l'maisa? So that's the question. Right, so the language of the Rambam is, it's in Ches Yud Aleph, right, where he says that V'chein ha-borer shmarim mitoch ha-mashkin ha-reize toldas borer o toldas merakeid v'chayiv. Sh'azorav ha-borer v'merakeid domen in yaneihem zel azeh v'pnei ma manu osan b'shloshim v'pnei shakol melach v'shayiv mishkan monen osan v'pnei atzma. So, what's he saying over there? How did you interpret this Rambam? Is he basically throwing his hands up? Says, you're just too similar. I can't figure it out. It's machlokas. What do you think? On the surface, hi.
The Rambam isn't he more into like the person doing the action?
As opposed to what opposed to the result?
Yeah.
That's not what we've seen so far. So far, it seems the other way around, that he's more focused on what happens, right, and on the purpose of what happens. You know, that he has a very broad definition of an av. You know, that anything that accomplishes the same av is usually included. So the simplest way to read the Rambam probably is like Rashi paskening like Rabba. Right? That basically it's Rabba's view that it could be Borer, but it's Rashi's view of Rabba that Rabba agrees it could also be Merakid. Right? So if you follow both Rabba and Rashi's interpretation of Rabba, so then the Rambam works from that angle. Right? It could be either. So you could say that, and it could read very well that way, right? And it's Hareza told us Borer, O told us Merake, B'chayit. The Bir Halacha, however, remember if I told you to look at this Bir Halacha, the Bir Halacha, take a look at it now, the Bir Halacha understands differently. The Bir Halacha thinks that the Rambam is actually Mesupuk, as we said before. Maybe he's throwing his hands up. He's not sure what Halacha is. And he's Mesupuk after following Tosus. Right? He follows Tosus that these are two mutually exclusive opinions. It's either Borer or Merake, and he doesn't know which one.
Are there other times that,
he throws his hands up?
And it doesn't say it, or it doesn't...
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to do a thorough study. I'm going to throw my hands up on that one. But, right, so for, see, it's not an afkamina for us, but it's not so clear that the Rambam will allow himself not to have an afkamina, because it's one thing if the Shulchan Aruch doesn't write it, right? Because the Shulchan Aruch was written for his dar. So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about kachim and onshin and all that stuff. So for him, there's no afkamina. Now, for the Rambam, is there no afkamina? Oh, so you could say yes. Right, it's true. So what I was about to say is there is an afkamina for the Rambam, because the Rambam does work in a world where there is onshin. So while the Shulchan Aruch can get away without focusing on the consequences of an onesh and the like, because there's no onshin in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, but the Rambam, who has all of halacha as it will be practiced, is man hamikdash, so he needs to paskin out everything. However, this could be l'shitaso, as we saw. This is what Gil was getting at when we talked about hasra a few minutes ago. So if the Rambam holds, you don't have to have hasra b'shem ha'av. So even Bisman HaMikdash, even in a time of Onshin, so maybe there is still no Nafkamina. He's saying it's a Tolda something. We don't know what, but according to me, the Rambam holds even more than that. You don't even have Surah B'Shem HaMav, you don't even have Surah B'Shem HaIsser. Right? So according to me, according to the Rambam, I don't care what Hasra you give, as long as you tell the guy that he's doing an Aveira. So whatever it is, it's something, it's either Borer or it's Merake, it makes no difference which one it is. We're just sure that it's something. So we know that's a problem, so you can now give the person hasra that he's violating the Torah, and the consequences follow. So that's two distinct ways of reading this Rambam. And I think there's no real reason why he can't be consistent with Rabba according to Rashi. But maybe it's also, as the words literally sound, that it's one or the other. I don't know which one, and it's like Tosfos, that's the way the Mishnah Berurah understands, that it's like Tosfos, that they're mutually exclusive, and I throw my hands up because it doesn't matter anyway. The Mishnah Berurah, in discussing this Rambam, so he says that there is, he throws in here what the difference might be between the two. He says, why exactly are they Mesupik? So the way he understands it is that merake means you are dealing with both substances together. It's a little bit similar to what we said before from the Ra'ah, as Rav Nassim Gestetner explained him, that normally when you have merake, it's, you have this combination, you have a solus and ochel together, and you have to physically deal with them in order to extract them. And here, since the wine comes out basically on its own, right, it's really the same point that was made in explaining the Ra'ah a few minutes ago, since the wine essentially comes out by itself, so maybe that's such a fundamental difference from Merake that maybe the Rambam's really not sure which it should be, and maybe that's essentially the Shaila here. Maybe that's essentially the Machlokas. Okay, so far so good? Everyone awake, alive? Alright, so what if, as we said, there's not much of an afkamina according to the Rambam? So what would happen if you did give somebody hasra on both? Right, so let's say somebody is about to do Mishamer, and let's say following the Rambam, you, or maybe following Rashi, if Rashi and the Rambam are on the same page here, So let's say you gave somebody hasra, right? Maisa, but definitely on the same page as far as that, right? Because the Rambam says it could be either, and Rashi's view of Rabbah is it could be either. So let's say you saw somebody doing mishamer, and you gave him hasra. He says, you say to the guy, you are violating both borer or merakid right now. So is there any consequence if you're using both instructions? Jonathan?
I mean, one is wrong. According to their opinion, it's one or the other. So I don't know which one.
No, but according to Rashi, and let's say according to Rashi, and if the Rambam agrees with him, that's not the case. Rashi says that Rabbah's view is that they're both right enough. You know, they're both true enough. So if I gave both Hasras, what would the story be? So the Mechas Trinuch talks about this. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, if you get punished for each Malacha.
Mm-hmm.
So if you violate two, you're going to be getting two punishments. If that person can hold that, then that's what we hold with that opinion.
See, but that's where it gets a little complicated. Because, so first of all, if we're talking about Misa, so it's not really relevant, you're not going to get killed twice. Right? But if we're talking about Shogeg, let's say, Achatas, so then theoretically there are two, maybe there should be two Chatos here.
But it's not sure.
Correct, but at least in question, are we saying that there are potentially two chatos? So Menachas Chinuch says yes. Menachas Chinuch says this means there are potentially two chatos. Because there are essentially two malachos being violated at once. So what do you think? Is that a unanimously held idea? Can you argue on that idea? First of all, where do you see a mucker for that idea? Something we've seen so far? And then think about whether or not you could disagree with the comparison. Jonathan?
I think the Gemara in the beginning of the paragraph of Yochanan says you can do all the malachas at once, and you're still going to be chayav just every one of them.
So that's right, in terms of, those are general malacha helam questions, right, where a person is doing different malachas separately. But here, this idea that one action can possibly get you chayav twice, so where do we see a makkah for that? Right, so it seems like the closest mucker for this is Omer B'Sarach Le'etzin. Right? The Gemara says, if a person is pruning a tree, and at the same time, he's both helping the tree, and he's interested in the wood that he's cutting off, so it's Kotzer and Zoreya, which is Zomer, at the same time, so he's Chayiv too. So that's the Menachas Chinuch's view here. You see from there that you could do one Maisa and be Chayiv two Malachos. So too, same thing here. What do you think? Is the comparison apt? Could you disagree with the comparison? Jonathan?
It's kind of different because as opposed to the Zomer Bitzar Leitzim case, Bora and Moroccan both achieved the same sort of tikkun.
Ah, okay, so that's an important point. So there are at least two levels on which you can disagree with this Menachas Chinuch. And the Keren Ora, if you take a look, we have one in the Beis Medrash, the Keren Ora on Tamoid Katan and Afbezim at Beis. Right, you may recall from the beginning of the year, we talked about Zoreya and Choresh and certain malachas that seem to involve either Zoreya or Choresh or both. So that was also a Sugya Moid Katan and Afbez. So there's a Keren Ora over there who talks about this Gemara in light of that. So the Keren Ora's opinion is different than Menachas Chinuch. He says you're only going to be chayav one. Even according to Rashi, that it could be either, you're still only chayav one. So clearly he doesn't accept the Menachas Chinuch's comparison. Right? Tovia?
I think it was about water in the ground. There's some halakas there on the Gemara.
Mm-hmm. Right, well, the water in the ground is either Choresh or Zoreya.
And again, we suggested there, why don't we
compare it to Zomer
Vitzar? Why don't we just say that it's both?
Right.
The fact that they were so clearly one or the other, which again, we tried to say is between one action, we're just trying to classify, mm-hmm. is really the same outcome as opposed to, let's say,
Zomer Tzara
Beitzim, where it might be two outcomes in the same process.
Right, so that's essentially what Jonathan was saying, right? So I think there are two levels, it could be another answer also, but at least two fundamental ways and one technical way to disagree with Menachas Chinuch here. Right, the Menachas Chinuch who's comparing this case to Zomer Tzara Beitzim. So, two fundamental ways you could disagree. And it's very interesting to consider them in light of this whole sugya. One is, you could say, what Jonathan and Tovia just said, is that in the case of Zomer B'Tzarech Le'etzim, you're doing one action, yes, But you're accomplishing two completely distinct things. You are helping the tree, that's Zoreya, and you're gathering wood for yourself in this one fell swoop. So that's Kotzer. But it's two completely different accomplishments, two different tikkunim, two different tachlises, however you want to call it. You're doing two different things with your one single action. So you can understand why you should be chayiv twice for that. But here, you're accomplishing the same thing. You are separating these two substances from each other. So there's no reason to call that two separate actions, two separate averos, for which you have to be metaking twice. So that seems to be the approach of the Keranot. What's interesting is you could go even further with this, and this very much gets into what our whole sugi is about over here. If you look, there's a beautiful new edition of the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch section on Shabbos, which we've been referring to all year, the Musach HaShabbos. So he devoted, as we know, Mitzvah Lamed Beis, he devoted a lot of attention to Shabbos, and therefore enough that it's been published as a standalone volume a number of times. The Machon Yerushalayim has a standalone volume. I think there are at least three different editions you can get of the Minchas Chinuch just on Shabbos, that one mitzvah with commentary. So in addition to the Machon Yerushalayim one, there's also a commentary that came out recently called Beshulei HaMincha, which is on, I think it's coming out on the whole Minchas Chinuch, but they published a special volume on Shabbos also. So it's a very very nice commentary on the Minchas Chinuch, very well done. So he talks also about, you could say that if there's two actions giving one tachlis, that would still be one action, like we just said. Or he quotes those who are machalik even further, and that's what's really fascinating. He says that, let's say, for example, I'm not sure if this is the example given, but it's just an example we'll mention now. Like we saw, we talked about kotzer and gozes, right? That's theoretically the same action, maybe would be a violation of both, depending on how you define either malacha. So there you have the same action, and really the same accomplishment. It just may technically fall into two different categories. But here, it's even less than that. Why? Because of the fundamental arbitrariness, for lack of a better word, of separating Borer and Merakit. That not only are you accomplishing the same thing, but they're really the same malacha. They're really the same malacha that happens to have different iterations in the Mishkan, and therefore they get listed twice. But maybe we never meant to say that if you do both at the same time, you should be chayiv two chatos. So this version is even more extreme in terms of just commenting on what our whole sugya is about, the difference between Merakit and Borer, and basically saying that it's really, at the end of the day, an arbitrary distinction. They're really the same malacha. They happen to get two slots on the 39, but they are not different enough that somebody who's doing the same action, that happens to be called both, should be chayiv two chatos. Even if I'm willing to say the same action with the same effect could get you two chatos and other things. And so basically two levels in which you could take it away from Zomer V'tzarech Le'etzim, because it's the same tachlis. Or even if I'm willing to give two chatos to the same tachlis, they at least have to be two genuinely distinct malachas. And Borer and Merakid are not genuinely distinct malachas according to this. It's a very striking idea. Hi.
I don't understand that, because even if you want to say that it's because for like a sort of technical reason, maybe because it was chashuv in the Mishkan that we had to make his two malachos, but that's the nafka mina, that because it was chashuv in the mincha, therefore it deserves to be two full malachos.
If you do two actions in one hella. But here, so that's the same way like kosev and mevashel should have all been one Isser of Shabbos, but if you do them both in one Helam, it's considered like two different Averis because of Chiluk Malacha. So I did one action of Bishul and one action of Kosev, and they both counted. So maybe two, if I did one action of Borer over here and one Merakit over here, they would both count as two Averis. But it's the same action, to call it both Borer and Merakit, that's maybe too much of a Chiddush. And the Chanavi, the Minchas Chinuch is with you. Right? The Minchas Chinuch will say what you just said. Yeah, that's the Chiddush of separating them. But maybe that's a bridge too far for some, and they'll say, no, that's not the case, and we're all going to count that as one.
And then also, what does he do with the Gemara that Zogi mentioned, though? With, so according to him, he would say that, that they would be chayav twice also, with the case of Marcher, if it was Zoe or Orish?
Well, it was Machlokas. We've shown him in general how to apply that whole sugya, so there's a lot of grounds to argue. But I also mentioned there's a technical approach to distinguish between Zomer and Tzarech Le'etzim and this. And the technical approach, you could say, is that it's just a difference. Some of your shonim had brought this up when we talked about that sugya. It's a difference between an av and a tolda. Right? That maybe if you're dealing with two different avos, so then maybe you could do two malachas at once. But if you're looking at one action, which is a tolda, and you're trying to figure out what is it a tolda of, so maybe there's no reason to ever call anything a tolda of two malachas. Now, we talked about this a little bit when we got into that whole Zarei and Choresh discussion, because some of the Rishonim say that's the difference between that and Zomer Mitzarech Leitzin. Because maybe what a tolda means, and this gets into a little bit some of the questions of the history of a tolda, which we've talked about a little bit at scattered intervals, but maybe you could say that a tolda means that Chazal, maybe if you assume that Chazal had the authority to assign toldos, which is itself a discussion, so maybe it means that Chazal perceived a certain action to be a malacha, a certain action to be too comparable to Doraisa malachas to not be a Doraisa malacha. But, and therefore they made that point by assigning it to a malacha that it's comparable to. But there's no purpose to combine it two malachas, because once we already established that it's aser, so then there's no need to say it's aser for two reasons. So if you're actually doing two avos, so fine, so we'll say, look, we have no choice, you did two malachas. But if you're doing a tolda, which happens to compare to two different avos, then there's no need necessarily to list both avos or to blame you for both avos. One av to establish that it's aser is enough. And therefore, let's say the Rambam here, the Rambam says it's one or the other. It's either Bora or Merakeit, so that's enough to call it a tolda, and your chayiv presumably won. Hi.
But won't, by not saying specifically which one it is, isn't that like problematic in terms of like being vague? What tolda? Don't you have to say this is a tolda?
You have to establish a tolda of something in order for it to be aser. But if you can equally establish that it's a tolda of two different things, so then there isn't such a need necessarily to say that it's one over the other or that it's both. Once we establish that it's aser, and it's undeniably aser, it's just an embarrassment of riches in a negative sense, you know, for which one it could be, so then there's no need for us to assign it to more than one av.
And that only goes according,
yeah, it could be theoretically either one. So for Hasra'ah purposes, it's going to depend on your view about this. According to the Rambam, it's not going to matter. According to Rashi and Rambam, for either reason, it's not going to matter, either if he doesn't care or because of his shita here. According to Rashi and Rabbah, it's not going to matter because they're both equal choices. So you could use either one. We know that it's usher for one of the reasons, and whichever one we say will work. Or it could get into, right, if you want to say, like, an exclusivist view that it's got to be one or the other, so then Chazal would have to assign it to one, but they still wouldn't necessarily have to assign it to the other. It gets a little bit more complicated to figure out how they assigned it to what. Our whole vantage point of coming later and trying to figure out which one would be more difficult, because we would have to say that even if it could equally be two, but Chazal apparently decided it's going to be Borer rather than Merakeit, so that's what it is. It becomes a much more complicated process. You're right. But, Nechanami. Hi.
We mentioned earlier in the year that you can't necessarily learn one malacha from the other.
Well, we don't necessarily have to assume that the rules that apply to one apply to the other.
So earlier, we talked about that in terms of Bishul and Zoraya. So the idea there was why Zoraya wasn't high was because if you just leave it in the ground on Bishul, it's considered like an extension of your hand.
Right.
So why here hanging the wine, why isn't that also considered an extension of your hand? Do you say that we just can't compare it, or is there...
No, it is considered an extension of your hand in terms of your being chayav for it. The question is that here, if we use ochel mipsoles or psolos miochel as the defining issue, so the question is, how do we define that? How do we define where the ochel is and where the psoles is? So if we're going to say, like the Eglital was quoting from the Alter Rebbe, that it's based on what's left in your hand, so then the question is just, how does this suspended structure fit into that model?
It's an extension of
extension of your hair, just like the...
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe that's the extension of your effort. Maybe the question is, what's physically in your hand? You know, when we're talking about cooking, we mean that the cooking, the food that's in the oven, is an extension of your hand in the sense of it's doing your work for you. But here we're talking about something physically being in your hand in order to define it as what you want as opposed to what you don't want. So what does that fall into in this case? No pun intended. Okay, so this, and there's a lot more to say about this, but this is some of the key elements of that issue. So it still provokes some very interesting points in terms of what the relationship is between Borer and Merakin and how they affect each other. Rav Moshe Brown, in the Sefer Tevas Moshe, so he also wonders then, if, let's say, Rabbah is right and Rashi is right, so then why do we need Merakin if Borer can really probably swallow up Merakin? So what he notes is that there is a fundamental difference here, that we see that Borer, we saw a heter for Derech Achila, or a heter when it's Miyad, Biyad, and Ochel Mitoch Psoles. And apparently when it comes to Merakin, so Merakin, the fact that you're going to need it right away, is not a heter here, apparently. So when the elements are there for it to be Merakin, which are primarily the usage of the Kli, so then there is no such heter of La'altar. And that becomes not only the defining element of Merakin, but it also, and this is really an unusual formulation, it comes back and defines Borer, that Borer is Mutter La'altar, but not when it's Bekli. And really, because when it's Bekli, it basically becomes Merakin. So the existence of Merakin basically becomes a kind of a Chumra on top of Borer. It basically becomes an extension of Borer, but applies L'Chumra in a way that Borer doesn't, and therefore justifies its existence. It's an interesting question, it's more theoretical, but is there a heter of Miyad for Borer, is there a heter of Miyad for Merakin, even theoretically? It's because the Minchas Chinuch says that Merakin is not Mutter Miyad because it's Bekli. So it sounds like it's a technical issue that, yeah, there is a heter miyad, it's basically borer, and it should be mutter miyad, but since it's also always bekli, so therefore it's lacking the conditions. Or should we say that there's no heter miyad for merakin at all? It's a different malacha, which never had a heter of miyad. So the Prima Gadim says that. The Prima Gadim says that even if you were able to do merakin miyad somehow, whatever that would mean, it still wouldn't be mutter miyad, because there is no heter miyad for merakin. It's a borer heter. It's not a merakin heter. So it's a very subtle difference, because it doesn't have any practical nafkamina, really. But it's the question of whether theoretically there could have been a heter of miyad for merakin. But it just goes to this question of, is merakin basically borer junior, or whatever you want to call it, or is it a separate malacha that has its own set of rules? And so why are we even assuming Miyad should come into the conversation? It's not a rule that's about Merakid in the first place. Hi.
That opinion sort of makes it seem that if you do Borer with a Kli, it's not Borer, it's always Merakid, no matter what, right?
Correct, which is what Ben Hananel sounded like.
Isn't that Pashas of the Gemara, was that we're trying to fit the Mishnah by filling in the gaps for the Borer Mishnah?
Yeah, but it could be that Borer and Merakid are so linked that they can be talked about in one breath. Right, which halach l'maisa we find that, right? So for example, if you want to look it up in Shulchan Aruch, so you'll look in Shin Yates and you'll find everything in a Tyruvus. And you'll find the Borer, Merakin, and Zohar all talked about in the same breath, because for all practical purposes, you're just going to segue from one to the other. So maybe that's what the Gemara always meant, that we're not going to allow you to do Borer Bekli because it'll turn into Merakin. Yeah, maybe that's the case. So this is really a very unusual relationship, I don't think we've seen this yet in previous malachas, of a malacha not only gaining its identity through a relationship to another malacha, which we talked about in the past with maybe Zorei and Choresh and other things, but a malacha that comes to redefine another malacha. That's because of the Chumra of Merakin, we see that Borer is more constrained. It's really a very unusual type of relationship. And again, so that's really the key driving issue in all of Merakin, just how does it define itself vis-a-vis another malacha. So this is yet another example of that. Was there a hand up here before? Donnie?
So anytime you do like a sifting type action without a kli, that would be defined as borer?
That's what, without a kli, it may be. So, but then it could be there might be exceptions. Like that's what the Maharit Salon was saying, right? That taking the fly out of the water, according to him, doesn't meet the standard for merakeh, but doesn't meet the standard for borer either. So it could be, you may have exceptions, but theoretically it would have that type of a relationship. So just try to mention the few minutes that we have left, and what we'll try to do tomorrow to finish up is one major thing we haven't really addressed is the significance of the Mishnah on Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, where it seems to say that if there's a significance to something not being, people not being makbid on something, or if it's drinkable, if the liquid is drinkable without the filtering, it should be mukta for that reason. And there's a rod, so that we probably won't get to that today. We'll pick up on that tomorrow. And then I think also, because it'll be briefer, we'll do the halach l'maisa of Meraki tomorrow. So our agenda for the next few minutes and for tomorrow is tomorrow talk about that Kuf Lamed Tes mission and its ramifications for understanding this malacha, and the halach l'maisa implications in general of Meraki. And then we'll segue into Malachas Machsheves. And for the next few minutes now, just to talk briefly about some other points of tangency or not between Borer and Meraki. So one issue is also, which we're not sure what the story was when it came to Borer. So we just discussed a second ago whether La'alter is even theoretically a principle that Borer and Meraki share. So what other limitations might be relevant? So first of all, is it specifically by Ochlin? So we're not sure whether Borer was specifically by Ochlin. That was a major debate that we saw last time. The Mechas Chinuch assumes that when it comes to Merakid, Merakid is not Davka by Ochlin. He says that based on the Gemara 9 Dalet Amud Beis about the Chavisa. If you look at the Rashi, I think it's Rashi Sheva Chatos on 9 Dalet Amud Beis, that includes Merakid over there in terms of Afar. So then that seems to say it applies even not by food, but this is also the same point that was brought to say the same thing about Borer, which we saw was itself a whole discussion. What about Gedule Karka? So when it comes to Gedule Karka, so we saw that that's also a big machlokas about a lot of the malachas that are in this section, the Sidur of the past. So the Egle Tal assumes that Merakid only applies by Gedule Karka. And others disagree. The Menchas Chinuch doesn't sound like that from his basic approach here, as others point out. While others might agree with the Egle Tal, right? We saw that when we talked about Chuvas Rebbe Akiva Eger, about Zora, that whole Chuvah has about the water being separated by the wind. So there he assumes that these malachas in general are subject to a Gedule Karka rule, not just Dosh, where the Gemara talks about it, or Ma'amer, where it was introduced in the later Sfarim as well, but that this whole set is Gedule Karka limited. So we saw that some said, well, what about Borer? Borer doesn't seem to be Gedule Karka limited, but others disagreed. So that's a whole discussion of itself. But that's Machlokas here, basically, in the later Sfarim, and the Achronim in general, is this something limited to Gedule Karka? So in the Beshulei HaMincha, that Sefer on the Minchas Chinuch we mentioned before, he makes an interesting point. He says that maybe we should say that when it comes to Merakeid, it should not be limited to Gedule Karka. Why not? Even if you earlier Malachos are, Merakeid should not be. Why not? Because what does Merakeid apply to in the Mishkan? So either it was flour, if you believe Sidur HaDepas was bread, or it was these ingredients for the dyes that have been now pulverized, basically. Something that's gone through tochen, right? It's post-tochen. And this is especially relevant because, you know, it sounds a little bit out of order. We talked about Borer and Zora, and then we put tochen in the middle and talked about Merakid. And you might think that the three should be together, Borer, Zora, Merakid. So there's significance, perhaps, to putting Borer after tochen. That maybe Borer specifically applies after Tochen has happened. So what does that mean for this purpose? It means that even if something that we're dealing with started with the Gedule Karka, even if in the Mishkan, whether it's bread or dyes, it started as Gedule Karka, it has been transformed, right? Remember the Ragachavra, that tochin means you transform A into B. So it's no longer gedulei karka. Right? That's specifically true if you believe that gedulei karka is not a historical comment, but it has to do with something being at a certain stage of existence. So that after it's gone through tochin, the fact that it started off as gedulei karka argues the Bishulei HaMincha shouldn't be relevant anymore. It's not called Gedulei Karka anymore, even if it started off that way, and therefore there's no reason to say that Merakit should be limited to Gedulei Karka, which I thought to be a fascinating point and one that really draws on a lot of things that we've seen so far. Yes, Gil?
It's necessarily after Tochin?
So it means a substance, so in the not that it's necessarily after Tochin in terms of, again, historical basis, but the point being, he's saying it basically l'chumra, that in the Mishkan, whichever one it was, whether it was bread or whether it was the salmonim for the dyes, it went through a tochin process before. And so either it was made into grain, it was made into flour, or it was pulverized in terms of turning into dyes. So the fact being that we shouldn't care about its stage before the tochin. The fact that it started off as gedulei karka, tochin is primarily a transformative process, so it's no longer recognizable as gedulei karka. So there's no reason to say that it should be limited to gedulei karka, even if the malachos before tochin did have to be gedulei karka, which I think is has a lot of implications for how you understand gedulei karka, how you understand tochin. It brings in a lot of different points that are thrown together, but it's an interesting point in and of itself. One last point we'll mention about the comparison between Borer and Merakid is what is the shear for Merakid? Right, so according to the Rambam, what's the shear for Merakid? Grogerus, right? The same Grogerus we've seen all along. But you could still ask a question. Once you accept it's a Grogerus, there's still a question you could ask. What question is that? Exactly, right? Where is the Grogerus? Is it in the Ochel or is it in the Psolus? So the Minchas Chinuch asserts with all these Malachos that it always has to be the Ochel. The Ochel always has to have the Psolas. But maybe you could say, Ochel has to have the Grogerus, excuse me. But maybe you could argue here, as some Svarim do, I think you could look again in the Shulei HaMincha, he notes this objection, that you could say that's true for Borer and Zoreh, right? Where essentially you're sending away the garbage and being metakein the Ochel. But if here your process is on both, you're working together with the Ochel and the Psolas together, maybe it should be enough if the Ochel and the Psolas mixture has a Grogerus. So maybe again, the question of to what extent Merakid is linked to Borer, maybe essentially opens it itself up once again. Okay, some of the stuff is kind of complicated. Everybody following? Everybody on the same page? So let's just quickly review what we spoke about. So we started off really dealing with this Gemara here about whether Meshamer is Borer or is it Zoreh? Sorry, Borer or Merakid. That was a Machlokas in the Gemara, and a Machlokas Rishonim, whether the opinion that says Borer, Rabbah's opinion, is it excluding Merakid, or is it a pluralist opinion that could go either way? And we saw that that was the view of Rashi, that's a pluralist opinion. But Tosus disagrees, having its own issues opened up because of that. Rabbeinu Hananel disagrees, provoking the issue of how does that fit with his view about the definition of Merakid, meaning a Kli. And the Ra'ah disagrees because he focuses on Merakid being specifically by Yavish. And that was an important view of the Ra'ah because it led to the explanation that maybe Merakid means you use a kli not only to do all the work for you, but you have to physically move the kli around. Maybe that's literally what the word merakid really means, and maybe that's what the malach of merakid requires, and therefore that's lacking in this wine-straining situation, and maybe that's why Rabbah excludes it from his definition according to those Rishonim. And we discussed the Maharid Salon in light of that, and then we talked also about the Eglei Tal's discussion of Bekivei Eger and Eglei Tal, who asks how come it's not Ochel Mitoch Psolas, Psolas Mitoch Ochel distinction, how come that doesn't apply according to Rabbah also, if you want to say he's an exclusivist. And he mentions the whole distinction there, that it all depends what you're holding in your hand. The Shulchan Aruch Harav's view that if you spill out psoles, it's still called ochel mitoch psoles because you're holding it in your hand. So if this is suspended in air, how exactly does that fit into the equation? And then we also saw the Mishnah Berurah's view. He was commenting on the Rambam. The Rambam says it's a told of one or the other, and we weren't sure how to read him, whether you read him like Rashi and Rabbah, that it could be either one, they're both equally true, or you view him like Tosfos, that they're exclusive of each other, and Rambam's not sure, it's a suffix. So he can leave it as a suffix because it doesn't affect halacha according to him. Mishnah Berurah read it as a suffix and said that the issue there also is that since you're, when it comes to Merakid, you're normally physically doing something, and here you don't have to do anything because the wine falls out on its own. Maybe that itself is the basis of the suffix. And then we said, based on the Rambam perhaps, and Rashi even more so, so what happens if you have Hasra for both? So is there a Chiyuv for both? So for the purposes of Misa, it's not really relevant. For the purposes of Shogeg, is there a Chatas twice, if you assume that both are equally relevant? So the Menchas Chinuch thought yes, and the Karen Orah thought no, and we discussed how this relates to the sugya of Zomer V'tzarech La'etzim, and we saw at least three possible differences. Either the technical difference that Zomer is talking about Avos, which are going to be independently Chayiv, while a Tolda only has to attach to one Av, or a more fundamental distinction that Zomer V'tzarech La'etzim has two accomplishments. Here you're doing one action that has only one accomplishment. And we saw an in-between view that said, maybe I'm willing to give you two chatos for even one accomplishment if it was really two distinct malachos, but Borer and Merakid are two linked, they're really one action, and therefore that's the whole story. And we saw that Moshe Brown noted that really Merakid essentially is a way of defining Borer, saying that when you're using a kli, it's going to be a malacha no matter what, even if it is for miyad purposes, and therefore it's really a way of limiting borer, which is a very interesting point. And then we saw that's perhaps machlokus, the Menchas Chinuch and the Prima Gadim, at least theoretically, is there a heter of miyad for meraki? Do we say there's no heter miyad for because it's always bekli? Or even if somewhere how you could do it not bekli, it's just not borer, and therefore it's not subject to the same heter. And then we discussed a little bit more about some of the possible linkages between Borer and Merakid, the question of Ochlin, the question of Gedulei Karka, the very fascinating point I thought that maybe it shouldn't be called Gedulei Karka no matter what because it's gone through a Tochian process which transforms it. And then the question also of the shear, the Menchas Chinuch's assumption that all three separation malachos, the shear has to be on the ochel, and the possibility that maybe here you could say that it's really a mixture of the ochel and psolas that you're working on, and therefore the grogris can be involved. So again, for tomorrow, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on that mission on Kuflan Mites about the Eino Makbid and the implications there, and we'll try to fill in the halacha l'maisa, and then move to Malachas Machshavas for the rest of the week. In honor of Yaakov. Everyone should have a fantastic day. Should be only good things.
How did that compare?
Yeah, I'm going to head to the face mask. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
well,
does Herman say
1, 2, anyone else
remember?
3, 4.